Thursday, April 28th. Welcome to Market Foolery. I'm Chris Hill. Joining me in studio today, the one and only Morgan Housel. Happy Thursday.
Hey, same to you.
It's nasty out there. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's not good.
I think I may have said this last week because, you know, every once in a while we'll touch on the weather. And it's just springtime in the D.C. area is gorgeous.
Right. But it lasts roughly 4 hours. There's a four-hour window every year.
And it looked like we were done with winter, and I just stepped outside a few minutes ago, and it is my least favorite weather, which is the cold rain. So it's nice that we're here in a warm, dry studio.
It's pretty gross.
There's a lot of earnings news. We're not really going to touch on any of it. We are, however, going to touch on what appears to be the story of the day, which is that Darren Huston, who is the CEO of Priceline, has resigned effective immediately. This is after an investigation found that he, and I'm just quoting directly here from the story, found that he had a personal relationship with an employee that violated the company's code of conduct. I guess my first thought is there's got to be more to this story. Like, they just broke this morning, and I, like, on the surface, okay, he broke their code of conduct, but something more has got to come out about this, because this is not, at least what has been reported so far, this is not a situation like we saw at, was it Oracle a few years ago? When Mark Hurd was the CEO of Oracle and doing quite well, by the way. He was at HP.
CEO of HP.
He was at HP. He was doing well at HP. He had an improper relationship with someone that also involved a misappropriation of funds. And for however well he did at HP, you could look at that and say, well, wait a minute. This is more than a relationship with an employee or a contractor or whoever. There's also money involved. He was shown the door.
Yeah.
On the surface of it, this does not appear to involve money.
Yeah, we don't know any details about this yet. What they did make clear was that the relationship does not impact the company's financials or business or operations in any way. So I think if it were similar to the Mark Hurd situation, that would have been reported and revealed already. And you and I were talking about this morning, with the caveat that we don't know any details. I don't know what their internal policies are for these kind of things. But when you take a well-liked CEO who's doing a good job, and that CEO has a personal issue, is it in shareholders' best interest to show them the door? That's kind of a moral question, and a lot of listeners will take different sides of that. But I kind of look at this as, like, do shareholders win in this situation? Did the CEO do anything that negatively impacts shareholders? You can say, look, if he violated the board's trust, that's one thing. I just wonder, in these situations, if you polled shareholders and you said, here's what happened. The CEO had an improper relationship with an employee. Should we let him go or not? I'm willing to bet the vast majority, a huge majority of shareholders would say, I don't care what he does in his off time. He's a good CEO.
Well, and we see that in presidential politics from time to time, where, you know, a president will have an extramarital affair, and, usually the majority of voters in America will just say, yeah, I don't really care about that. I care about the job that the president is doing.
I mean, I guess this is a different situation, because if he violated a company policy, or maybe if he lied to the board, I'm making that up. There's no evidence that he did, but then there's a breach of trust. But I think it's interesting to ask, if a CEO of a company that you own shares in had an affair with a non-employee, so that's also a breach of ethics, a show that he may not be as honest as you thought. If a CEO had an affair with someone who was not an employee, would you want that CEO to be fired? I suspect the answer for the huge majority of shareholders would be no.
See, I'm torn on this one, because on the surface, it appears that here's someone with a good track record. He took over as CEO of Priceline in November of 2013. Certainly from the standpoint of the stock, and I'm not a shareholder of Priceline, but stock up about 30% while this guy's been in the corner office. So oversaw the acquisition of OpenTable and Ctrip. You know, this is someone with a good track record as CEO. On the other hand, we talk from time to time about boards of directors and how there are a lot of boards out there that are either asleep at the switch or are very, you know, have a conflict of interest in terms of their relationship to the CEO. And in this case, I think if you're a Priceline shareholder, if you're looking to find the good in this, because you may in fact be looking at this story saying, well, wait a minute, I don't really care about an improper relationship with an employee that's not a direct report.
Yeah.
But I think you probably should feel good about the fact that this, if nothing else, this appears to be right now an independent board.
Yeah.
A board that launched this investigation, presumably had merit to do so. I don't know, but don't you think there's going to be a long read story coming out in a month about this?
Probably.
That's either going to reveal more than we know right now about, and then we'll go, well, gosh, yeah, they really should have shown this guy the door. Or potentially it was a witch hunt, that there was someone on the board who just had it out for this guy.
Or I think another possibility.
Or both.
And I have to qualify this again with, I have no idea what the details of the story are, other than just the brief headline that came out this morning.
We'll just entitle this episode Rampant Speculation.
That's basically what it is.
Reckless and rampant speculation.
I could also see a situation where the board says, we really like the CEO. He's doing a great job. And yes, he has this personal failing on the side, but we have to do this just to cover our own butts. Because the view of boards today is that it's a cush job where you don't have a lot of responsibility, and it's just kind of like this formal role. They're not really doing much. They're not really engaged in the company. And to shed that vision, the board just feels like they need to do something to show that they are not asleep at the switch. But they still like the CEO and trust the CEO. I could see that situation playing out in some of these stories. I'm torn on the issue, though, and I know a lot of listeners will have different views on this stuff. But it's an important issue because it's happening. We talked about Mark Hurd. This happens. The Mark Hurd situation is interesting, too, as we were talking about this morning. He was almost immediately hired by Oracle.
By Oracle. That's
their competitor,
that was
who is now crushing HP. So it's like, who won in that situation? Like, did shareholders win in that situation? No.
HP shareholders certainly did not win in that situation. By the way, speaking of boards, I don't know if you saw this, and Uber, which is a private company, and based on recent comments from the CEO, is looking to stay a private company for as long as possible, which is, all things being equal, a smart move on their part.
Yeah.
Just named Arianna Huffington to the board of directors,
yeah,
which got a lot of attention and fanfare on Wall Street, and I thought, well, Arianna Huffington, accomplished businesswoman, very smart, but I couldn't help but think, among other things, okay, but she heads up a media organization.
Yeah.
And it's a private company. That's fine. But I think now, to the extent that I'm reading articles on the Huffington Post about Uber, I'm going to have that in the back of my head that, the person running Huffington Post sits on that board.
I do think it is possible for media organizations to truly be independent. And I think our self-serving example here is John Mackey, CEO of Whole Foods,
yes,
is on the board of directors of The Motley Fool. It might be hard for people to believe this, but it is 100% okay at The Motley Fool to write a negative article about Whole Foods. And that happens. You could go find that. No one at The Motley Fool, and I truly mean this, feels any need to butter up Whole Foods because he's on a board of directors. So I do think it's possible for media to be, open and honest, even when they have.
And the same goes for Alphabet, because the most recent addition to our board of directors here at The Motley Fool is Suzanne Fry, who's an executive at Google. Same thing there. What have you been writing about lately?
Same stuff. Behavioral finance, history.
What were you saying the other day? We were talking the other day. You were saying, are you like digging into the Civil War or something like that? You were looking into the Battle of Antietam?
Well, you asked me yesterday what you want to talk about on today's show, and I just said the Civil War. I couldn't think of anything else to talk about. But that got into a conversation about presidents that you and I were having.
Yes.
And I have a question for you.
Okay.
Chris, because we were talking about presidents, and of course, we at the Motley Fool.
Is it a presidential election here?
It might be. I heard something about it. I don't have any details on that yet, though. I went back and looked at the average stock market performance adjusted for inflation, for every president going back to Teddy Roosevelt, who do you think sits atop that list?
Okay.
During which president has the stock market performed the best? And these are average annual returns, so it doesn't matter how long the president was in office.
Okay. I'm going to guess that Bill Clinton and Dwight Eisenhower are, I'm going to say one of those two is at the top of this list. And I'm basing that on certainly the performance of the stock market in the 90s, the bulk of which Bill Clinton was the president for. And I was recently flipping through one of my favorite books of all time, a book entitled The 50s, mm-hmm. by David Halberstam, and just sort of the post World War II boom that Dwight Eisenhower oversaw. So I'm gonna bet on those two horses.
I'm gonna read you the top five.
Okay.
Okay, ready? Coolidge, number one.
Silent Cal?
Silent Cal.
Okay.
Gerald Ford, number two.
Gerald Ford was president. Wow.
Amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
The stock. He was only president.
He wasn't president for that long.
Like 2 years.
The market did pretty well during that time.
I didn't even consider Ford.
Number three, your favorite, Warren G. Harding.
Also someone president for about an hour and a half.
Number four, Bill Clinton.
Okay.
Number five, Dwight Eisenhower.
All right.
Let me tell you number. I was going to tell you number five. Or I was going to tell you top five. I got to tell you number six, though. It's Barack Obama.
Even with the... I mean, he took office January 2009, and stock market just continued to fall.
Well, it fell for about 6 weeks, and then it's gone virtually straight up since then.
Okay, yeah.
But interesting, during Eisenhower's presidency, the average annual stock market return adjusted for inflation was 13.9% per year. Under Obama, it's been 13.5% per year.
Wow.
Yeah. Silent Cal, 29.1% a year. Now I got to ask you, who do you think the bottom three on the list? Presidents for whom the stock market did the worst under.
I'm going to say Richard Nixon is in that group. I'm going to say that I'm going to put FDR in that group, even though FDR was president for, 14 years, but the Great Depression, and Herbert Hoover. I'm going to go Hoover. Hoover's at the bottom.
Very bottom is Herbert Hoover.
Okay.
Above that, Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
Above that, George W. Bush. Those are the bottom three.
Wow, W had a. Weren't there any years that W?
Well, see the with W, he came in pretty much at the end of the .com
at the peak. Yeah.
So he came in when prices were high, and he left pretty much smack at the bottom of the Great Recession. So, rough timing. Same with Hoover. Not very good timing.
By the way, I think that's a decent bar bet that you just gave people because I'm guessing that anyone who would bet on that, their mind would go. In part the way mine did, which was, well, who had a long run? Who had a long run? And two of the top three are people who were in the Oval Office for just a couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we get into the current race or should we wait? Let's wait.
We should wait, but I would say this. Whenever there's a presidential election, you always have tons of stock market commentary that says – if this person wins, you should do this with your investments. And if this person wins, here are the stocks that are going to perform poorly. It is almost always, with very few exceptions in hindsight, terrible advice. It's so easy to create a narrative that says, if so-and-so wins the election, here's what's going to happen to the economy. Here's what's going to happen to these industries. The narrative is easy, and it's oftentimes seems rational and makes sense. And almost always in hindsight, it's wrong. I'll give you a couple examples. In 2008, there were a lot of narratives that said if Barack Obama becomes president, he's going to regulate the financial industry, so stay away from banks. He's going to be big on green energy, so go buy solar. And that made a lot of sense. Like that was rational analysis. It seems apolitical. It's just like this is what's happening. You know. And it's true. There was a lot of bank regulation over the last 8 years. There was a big move into green energy. But during the last 8 years, bank stocks have done incredibly well coming out of the financial crisis. And solar companies have just fallen to the floor. So like the exact opposite of what the narrative was the truth. The other one was in 2000, a lot of people said, if George Bush wins the election, there's going to be a tax cut, which is going to boost consumer spending. And therefore, you should buy airline stocks because more consumer spending, people are going to travel more, buy airline stocks. Makes a lot of sense. And within 5 years, of George Bush becoming president, almost all the major airlines were bankrupt. And so here again, it's just so easy to draw a story, and it's a terrible way to invest. And almost without exception, how you were investing last year should be how you're investing this year and next year. You really shouldn't let the election or politics skew your investing decisions.
It's just one additional piece of noise to be on guard for.
But it's a loud piece of noise.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's always noise that investors have to deal with, but every 4 years, this is one extra instrument in the orchestra of noise.
And you see so many smart people, because people have very strong beliefs about politics and, you know, what the next president's going to do. People get really, really deep into it. But when they start letting it influence their investments, I've seen smart investors, good investors, let it influence how they invest, almost always to their detriment. I feel like every 4 years, I just want to come on the show to say this.
All right, we'll have you back in 4 years.
Great.
Do you think we should just launch our own competitive podcast, like a podcast to compete with Hardcore History with Dan Carlin?
I'd do it. I'd do it.
We'd be crushed.
I mean, we have a list.
For those who don't know, and we're not in the habit of recommending other podcasts, but if you are interested in history, Hardcore History with Dan Carlin is one of the most popular podcasts for a reason. He is a very compelling storyteller.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And I remember the first time I heard about it, our colleague Austin Smith was telling me about, you know, he said, "Do you listen to Hardcore History?" I said, "I've never even heard of it." And he described it, and I just had this blank look on my face, like, wait a minute, how is this popular? It you just described a single person talking for 2.5 hours. Mm-hmm. How is that? And he said, "You just got to listen."
You got to do it.
And I had a long drive ahead of me one time, and I downloaded an episode, and holy cow, he's just
it's good,
fantastic.
It's quite good.
You know what? I'm going to.
In fairness, though, you and I just listed presidents in sequential order of stock market returns.
Take that, Dan Carlin.
You know.
You know what? I'm going to recommend one other podcast because this is something that you and I have both done. There is a young man named Aaron Watson who has a podcast. It's an interview podcast that he does. It's entitled Going Deep with Aaron Watson. I met Aaron in Austin, Texas at South by Southwest. I had just tweeted this out earlier this week. He came over to the podcast center. We had a great conversation. He said, "Hey, I have this podcast I do. I'd love to have you as a guest." And two of my guests include Morgan Housel and Barry Ritholtz. And I thought, wow, you got Barry Ritholtz? That's great. But it's one of those podcasts that and I'll do this from time to time. I'll find an interview podcast and I'll just look through, even if I don't know who the interviewer is, I'll just look through, well, who is this person interviewed? And if there are people that I'm interested in, I'll go check. So you can check it out. Going Deep with Aaron Watson is the name of the podcast. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you'd find a podcast. Morgan's interview is in there. Barry Ritholtz, Russ Roberts, who you and I have each interviewed. Yeah. So a lot of good content. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chris.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and the Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. That's going to do it for this edition of Market Foolery. The show is mixed by Ann Henry. I'm Chris Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Monday. We'll